The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Danny Cannell, Chip Patterson, Barton Simmons, and Tom Fernelli. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Danny Cannell. That's Tom Fernelli. That's Barton Simmons. I'm Chip Patterson. We got a lot to get to here on a Monday. Of course, we will get you with your doggy bag, with your Noles to go. We got two spreads in a row, and we are on the winning side down in Tallahassee. We will get to that in just a little bit. Some significant injury news in the ACC, but we begin with the continued fallout from an embarrassing loss for the Tennessee Volunteers. Now, this coaching change that comes is actually on the defensive side of the ball, as Jeremy Pruitt announced that defensive line coach and co-defensive coordinator Jimmy Brumbaugh has been fired. Pruitt said, you know, if you think it's not going to work out, you might as well make this change now. He has indicated that he will himself coach the defensive line for the rest of the season. Now, Brumbaugh just came in to the staff this year. He was a little bit of a late change. Barton, you do the coaching highlights and lowlights. You are our resident assistant coaching aficionado. If you had come to me and been like, hey, Chip, there's been a change at Tennessee, I would say, with starting quarterback? And you're like, no. And they're like, it's a coach. Oh, is it like a shakeup with the offensive staff, how they're calling plays? No, it's with the defensive line coach. Like, do you think that this is it tied to performance in a way that makes you feel like this is going to be a way for Tennessee to get better?
I don't know about that. I don't know about a way to perceive, to expect Tennessee to get better. I mean, Jeremy Pruitt's going to take over the defensive line coaching job, as you said. This is, I can't say that, like you, I wouldn't have said that I would have expected this move. I'm not watching the all 22 film. Like, I'm not breaking it down on Sundays after the games. So maybe it looks a lot worse on film than it is with a casual watch. I will say that the Kentucky game was a bit of a, it was a bad look second half. When Kentucky had the ball, I think 21 of 30 minutes in the second half against Tennessee. So they did a really good job of possessing the football, you know, kind of plodding along, shortening the game. And I can imagine it was a little frustrating for Jeremy Pruitt to not be able to get the ball back and not be able to make the kind of comeback that he could have after they outgained them in the first half. And yet, like, this is sort of the nature of the coaching industry. Is this is a guy who had a pretty secure job at Colorado. He probably would have been taken by Mel Tucker to Michigan State. He probably would be sitting pretty for another couple years with the Michigan State gig right now if, you know, a sweeter gig hadn't come along in the SEC. And here, less than 1 year in, he's out of a job, and Pruitt's back on the market looking for a defensive line coach. So there's been some turnover in Pruitt's coaching staff over the last couple years. You know, I just think that's sort of Pruitt. He's not going to just sort of settle for something that he's not happy with. You know, whether this was like a deserved or not is kind of hard to say.
This doesn't make any sense to me at all. Like, Tennessee 2 weeks ago against Georgia, I thought the most impressive part of that Tennessee team was its defense.
Yeah.
And I thought its defensive line did very well against a Georgia offensive line that is one of the better ones in the country and has, you know, got NFL talent on it in the future. So I was like, okay, well, my eyes aren't really telling me anything that's behind this move. So then I go, when I found out the news, I go look at the stats. And if you look at like the advanced stats from Football Outsiders, like their defensive line metrics, Tennessee's defensive line ranks 21st nationally. So it's not elite, but it's not a problem. And if you go through on standard downs, it's 48th. But on passing downs, it's second. opportunity rate, it's 10th. Power success rate, it's 18th. Stuff rate, it's 19th. Sack rate overall is 27th. The only real bad area it has so far is sack rate on standard downs, where it ranks 68th nationally. So maybe Pruitt's pissed off that they're not getting enough pressure on the quarterback on first and second down. But I mean, overall, I thought this unit, you know, my eyes have told me this unit's been good, and the stats say it's been pretty good too. So I don't know what this is. I feel like this could just be a coach who's kind of mad and looking to do something to fire his team up.
You know what doesn't make a lot of sense now either? That they gave a raise to Jeremy Pruitt, what, 3 weeks ago? Because they started off 2-0. Like that you talk about 0 cents whatsoever. And it's driven me nuts, because this Tennessee kind of momentum has been building, and I've just been watching it being like, do we realize who they've beaten in this 8-game win streak? It's nobody. And then the minute they face a couple of opponents with a pulse, they look kind of like they did when people were all up in arms about Jeremy Pruitt last year when they started off 1-2 and, you know, got off to a rough start. So that was my first reaction. Like, all right. And then I'm like, I'm glad I'm not a defensive lineman in that room. Like, oh boy, like you talk about, oh crap. Like, here comes the enforcer. Like, but it doesn't make a ton of sense. I guess, hey, if you have that mentality, if you want to get something done, you have to do it yourself. I mean, this is the ultimate example of that. What if it doesn't get turned around? Like, then who are you going to point the finger at? And here's my ultimate, like, opinion in all of this. Coaches have really big egos, and sometimes they just don't mix for whatever reason. And I'm not even saying that's it. They have big personalities. Maybe it just wasn't working, and it was the opportunity. And so you said, you know what? This is the perfect opportunity to make a change. I'm just going to nip it in the bud right now, be done with it, and move on.
Well, Pruitt did have a quote. I think he said something like, we just had philosophical differences or something. Yeah. Wasn't there something like that?
Mm-hmm.
That's code for, I think I could do a better job coaching the defensive line than he has.
Yeah. Or I can't stand this guy.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like, exactly. Like, or that.
Yeah. Like I'm thinking maybe that like Pruitt like was getting in his ass after a game, and Jimmy Brumbaugh like snapped back, and Pruitt was like, no. Like, this is my show. Like, get your ass out of here. We'll go hire somebody else. You ain't that good. But who knows? But that's sort of what it feels like.
But to me, we've landed here after the move, and Tennessee still has all the same problems. It's still got Jarrett Garantano as a quarterback. It's still got, like, it's still putting the football on the platter for opposing teams and not being able to develop any kind of consistency against teams that have strong defensive lines. And the time of possession, I know that was something you just mentioned and something you wrote about in Coaching Highlights and Lowlights. Like, that was frustrating, but it's also frustrating when you've got multiple pick sixes in the same game. Like, you take those points away, and this is just a classic rock fight where maybe Tennessee's going to be able to have a chance and not feel like it's so hamstrung to have to score so quickly. So you're looking at Tennessee moving ahead, and you're just like, well, this might have been good for Jeremy Pruitt, or maybe this was a chemistry issue on the coaching staff, but they're still going to get hammered by Alabama. They still might lose to Arkansas.
Are we sure? Is Tom sure about that?
Okay, I guess we need to check in.
Upset check.
Upset check, Tennessee, Alabama.
Not looking good for right now for the Vols, in my mind, just that matchup. I worry about Jarrett Garantano against that defense. Just a hunch.
Like Auburn and Vanderbilt, and again, like the Arkansas, like you're looking at basically they're 2-2 right now, and 5-5 seems likely. And I think they probably would have been 5-5 even if everybody had to swallow their ego and continue to move forward. I don't think that this is anything that is going to have me feeling like a spark was put in the Vols or that any problems were answered.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think Danny's point is, and I actually still tend to believe that, like, I'm not like bailing on Jeremy Pruitt. I think Jeremy Pruitt is still a good hire. I think he has things pointing in the right direction. I think he's going to be the right coach for Tennessee. But I do think it's relevant to be like, all right, so you're firing your defensive line coach. You just got a raise. And you look across this country, like Dino Babers right now is about to go fourth about a 5 years, sub 500. But the 1 year he gets 10 wins, he gets a huge raise. So now they got a $17 million buyout or whatever it is. And so it's just unnecessary. Like, why is there this compulsion to throw this money at these coaches before they need it? Like, Jeremy Pruitt was going to be a very enlightening season about Jeremy Pruitt regardless. Like, what's the rush two games in? So, I'm not doubting Pruitt, but it's silly.
And that's not like this was not a bash Jeremy Pruitt start. Yeah. I can't believe they gave him a raise. It was literally, I can't believe they gave him a raise because there was absolutely zero reason to do that. I think the one takeaway is there are some very smart business savvy agents out there. And there are some athletic directors, presidents who maybe not as much as business savvy as some of these agents are. And they are terrified if I let my coach get away and he goes somewhere else, and we lose them and we're back to the doldrums or back to 4-8, then I'm going to get fired. So they say, no one's going to second guess this. I paid my guy. And yet that's who should be accountable in all this are the people that are doling out these extensions.
Simi Jexton, maybe?
Yeah.
Is this just the fine work of one of the great power brokers in the college football coaching industry?
You should know why these coaches get these extensions, Barton, because you know when you talk to recruits, the number one thing on every recruit's mind is always, well, this coach only has 3 years left on his deal, and this one's got four, so I'm going there.
Yeah, well, you know what? I was thinking about going to Florida, but I saw that extension. I saw what Coach Pruitt's making. Now I'm going to go to Tennessee.
I love that on message boards. It's like, well, we got to extend him for recruiting. It's like, no, you don't.
I was looking ahead, and I just mentioned Tennessee at Arkansas. Quick sidebar: are we too excited about Arkansas right now? Like, I think that we've hit a dividing line where you've either got to decide that Arkansas is the second best team in the SEC West and one of the great stories in the conference, or we're just way overreacting to everything we've seen from the Hogs, and that over the course of the rest of the SEC season, there's going to be some regression.
I think expectations certainly play a role because, I mean, listen, I'm really excited about Arkansas. I'm enjoying Arkansas. I posed the idea that maybe they might be the second best team because they could be 3-1 right now. If the refs didn't screw up that Bo Nix call, we could be talking about a 3-1 Arkansas team. But I think that it comes through the frame of what we expected before the season, because nobody expected that we were talking about whether they'd win a single game, let alone two. So the fact that they're 2-2 right now, when we were thinking 1-9 was a very likely possibility, and hell, they've got more SEC wins in the last 3 weeks than they did in the last 3 years.
I think Arkansas could lose almost every game, and I still think it was a great story. Yeah. Now, the momentum of it, of course, would die down. It would feel like a little bit of a thud to finish the season, and I don't think they do. That's the great part of this story, is I think they can win more games. Like, let's let it play out before we have to make a call on just how good or bad of a year this was. Either way, it's been fantastic so far, and I think, I mean, this is crazy because there were a couple schools when we did win totals, it was, oh, Arkansas, W. And now that we're not saying that is awesome. Like, I love that we're able to have that conversation. I think the Tennessee game is going to be phenomenal. I think, shoot, the Texas A&M game. Like, Tom, you're saying that, like, that's going to be a compelling game. There's a lot more football left for Arkansas to play. Let's just enjoy it and see how it plays out.
I think the more interesting, like, to me, the more interesting story is less about is Arkansas, you know, second or third best team in the West. More about is the West not a very good division? Like, if they all receded to Arkansas, and it's really interesting that this year, where potentially that's the case, where Arkansas, Mississippi State, Auburn, LSU, and what, Texas A&M, I guess, who else am I missing? Like, they're just all this kind of packed together, and we can't add any relativity to it because none of these teams are playing non-conference games, and so we just sort of have to decide whether this is, you know, Arkansas getting good or the rest of the conference getting bad. I mean, obviously it is some element of both, but no, I think in terms of Arkansas's expectations, like I'm
glad you brought that up and not me, because I'm the anti-SEC guy. But I do like Georgia fans were upset because I was like, you know what? I don't know if you guys belong in the playoff. And they're like, well, we played Bama tough. We're undefeated. What if we win the rest? Start, you know, outside of, like, to this point, you look at it, you're like, Auburn wasn't as good as we thought they were. You know, now it works in both ways, though. Arkansas is better win now than it looks like it was at the time. But it looks like this could be a case where you really see cannibalization, like, and all of a sudden it could be Bama and a bunch of two-loss teams, or a bunch of 500 teams with maybe Georgia, maybe Florida up there. A&M has a chance to be there. But, like, A&M is a good example. Find another impressive win on their resume if the West is exactly what you just stated, Barton. And it's tough to justify, hey, these are a lot of wins where they belong to be that second team in the playoff. So, like, you kind of need some teams to step up and be better than just 500.
If South Carolina beats LSU this weekend, and by the way, Miles Brennan still questionable to play against South Carolina as what Ed Orgeron is describing as a, quote, significant lower body injury. We discussed the initial injury news last week before LSU Florida got canceled. Barton, you know, you filled in. We're going to a pair of true freshmen. The way that the offense sets up, you need to be an accurate passer. Neither of them particularly looks like they are ready for that moment at this point in their young careers. If South Carolina beats LSU, SEC East is better than the SEC West, hands down, right? Because those are two mid-tier teams this year. South Carolina and LSU, probably each about the fourth best team. If South Carolina's got wins against Auburn and LSU, got to say East is better than the West.
So,
West, West champ.
So West best versus West best versus East best, West two versus West first East two have both gone to the West. So, you know, you got Bama over Georgia, A&M over Florida. So, you know, it's what do you, you know, what's
more, but is it depth
conference or the bottom?
It depends on the year. Like we know how this game plays out. It depends on what narrative you want to push. Like, is it the top or is it the depth? And it will depend the rest of the season too.
Little bit of injury news. Speaking of Miles Brennan coming from the ACC, quote significant is what Coach O used, but I'm going to declare this one incredibly significant as NC State finds out that Devin Leary will miss 4 to 8 weeks after a lower body injury. He had, I believe it was an ankle. He had successful surgery and 4 to 8 weeks. I mean, we're talking about coming back. You know, you might get
pretty much the season.
Yeah. You might get 2 or 3 games in the best case scenario. And that's where it all of a sudden turns to Bailey Hockman, who did y'all see the one-handed against the helmet catch by Thayer Thomas? And yes. Did you notice how Duke should have had it as an interception instead in that same moment? Like that is the tightrope that NC State's offense is going to walk on with Bailey Hockman, where you just got to hope that it goes through the DB's hands and the wide receiver can pin it to the side of his helmet. Now he is a mobile quarterback and maybe we start to see some of the bright spots from him being able to run the ball alongside a Ricky Person Jr. and a Bam Knight. But you know, NC State just pops up in the rankings as a top 25 team. Rivalry game against North Carolina this week. First time both teams have been ranked in the top 25 since 1993. When they go down and have that meeting. So do you see a way for Bailey Hockman to keep NC State in the top 25?
No. I mean, I feel like Devin Leary is not Trevor Lawrence or Mac Jones or anybody of that caliber, but I just felt like the difference between this NC State offense from when it had Hockman early in the year going to Leary, it just felt so much more dangerous and so much more difficult to defend because there was a lot more you had to respect about it. Whereas I feel like when Hockman's in there, you can just kind of keep your guys up close to the line of scrimmage, bunch everything up and say, try to get the ball over us because we don't think you can make that throw to begin with. So I think they become a lot easier to defend. And I think that limits their ceiling. And it's a real shame because they are off to a really good start. And I think that they had a chance to be not like, you know, competing for an ACC title, but a team that's going to be finishing in the top 25, being in the rankings all season long, even after everybody gets back and keeps going. But now it's going to be hard for them to stay there at this point with Hockman. And unless he takes some major step forwards as a passer, because from what I've seen of him so far, I don't see it happening.
Here's the nice thing is, this is where you come to the realization and the clarity that, I would say the tougher part of their schedule is behind them. Now they still got Miami and North Carolina, but this is the team that doesn't get Clemson and doesn't get Notre Dame, not either or, doesn't get both. And so you got North Carolina and Miami the next couple weeks. Then you got whatever Florida State is. You got whatever Liberty is. You got Syracuse and you got Georgia Tech. I mean, that's if you can get to, they got 4 wins right now. If you can get 3 out of that, I mean, if you can get to Liberty, Syracuse, Georgia Tech, that's all right. But to your point, Tom, yes, like I was so impressed with this offense, that first game against Wake Forest, put up 45 points. They won. They're balanced. I made Tim Beck my offensive coordinator of the week, and yet it all felt very much like it was in spite of, not because of Bailey Hockman. It was like, it was walking the tightrope on, all right, how do we, you know, just pass it enough to keep him off balance, but not leave our guy too exposed. That's going to bite him. I mean, that's going to bite him against a Miami. I don't know how they beat a Miami now. Who knows with North Carolina, but you just got to assume that those are two games you go in there and you're interested in, you think they're winnable. And I don't know how that those two games are winnable right now.
Isn't this season, I mean, it's already going way better than expect for NC State. So you've got a little bit of house money. You kind of have an excuse going in. And I look at the game this weekend, North Carolina is the team that's reeling, I think, a little bit more. Like, we'll talk about Florida State later. We still don't know what Florida State is, but you still lost that game. Now it's kind of like, all right, what really is this North Carolina team? They're feeling a little bit more pressure. And there is sort of a built-in excuse for NC State if they don't play well against an in-state rival. So maybe it allows them to relax, and maybe there's a confidence in – it's not like you got somebody you don't know what you're going to get, right? So you should be able to build an offense around Bailey Hockman. Like, you know what you've got. And there's something to be said about a team that's got some confidence. Hey, man, we've seen we can win, and I know the quarterback is gone, but this team is more confident than they were, you know, week one, because they've seen themselves win, and there will be a drop-off. But I think from here on out, like, yeah, I think 6 or 7 wins would be a massive achievement for this team.
Without
Leary, you know?
For sure. Last two games, defense has played a lot better. Lee McNeil's awesome. Young secondary starting to force some turnovers. They're going to need it. Peyton Wilson's a monster. That guy flies around the field. They'll need it. They'll need every bit of that defense, especially going up against the Tar Heels. All right. Speaking of quarterback injury news, we might be getting Spencer Sanders back. Initial indications from Stillwater look like going into a massive game against Iowa State. Sanders, the Big Ten newcomer of the year in 2019, might be back in the lineup. Oklahoma State because you had the Baylor game postponed, they've just done that thing that happens this year where you just, like Notre Dame, just sort of sat on the side, right? And we make so much out of every single week because we have so little football that when a team takes a couple weeks off, it's easy for them to drift away. But this is one of the biggest games of the week, really, and definitely one of the biggest games in terms of the Big 12 title race between Iowa State and Oklahoma State. So, Mr. Pokes, do you think that Spencer Sanders' return or Shane Illingworth having to go out there and face this Iowa State defense, are you feeling either way like this is going to be a time where Oklahoma State's able to show out in a big spotlight opportunity? I mean, they're daggum number 6 in the country.
I was assuming that Spencer Sanders has been teed up here, ready to roll the last couple weeks. Is that not – I mean, I thought
Yeah, he was almost ready before. He's definitely playing.
Yeah, okay. So then I'm not okay. So we got a Spencer Sanders. I know that Ben Kurtzval is trying to say that, like, Shane Illingworth is potentially going to beat out Spencer Sanders, but no, that's not. I don't think that is true. I think Spencer Sanders is allows this offense to be really good. I think that this is a huge game. I think that they will win. I think that Oklahoma State will continue to assert itself as one of the top teams in the country. Right now, it is very much a guess. It is very much a projection. They haven't really played anybody, but they have played – the teams they have played pretty good defense. Tulsa's a pretty good defense. West Virginia is number 1 in the country, I think, in yards play defense. Inaccurate?
No, but there's your colleague Brendan Marcello had a nice pushback on that. Like, there's the dueling narratives. There's like, hey, defense is down everywhere, but the best defenses are in the Big 12. And like, you dive into that and you're like, wait. Are we really ready to say that the Big 12 is going to be the conference of defense this year? Like, there's a Texas Tech game around the corner. There's Texas and Oklahoma's defense. Like,
saying West Virginia is Georgia West.
Right.
Georgia North, I guess, whatever it is. I'm just saying that it's Oklahoma State's offense even without Spencer Sanders, has played some competent defensive units. So, like, the fact that they're not throwing up 45 doesn't concern me. The fact their defense is playing great is awesome. It's very encouraging. And I think that they, you know, both come together for this Iowa State game in a way that it will I think make a statement one way or the other. Either it'll prove me wrong or prove me right.
You know, one thing that the two best defenses in the country, West Virginia and Oklahoma State, have in common? They just played Kansas. Yeah. No, they played Kansas. And that really helps your defensive numbers, especially in a small sample
size. Yeah, when you've got a small sample size, Oklahoma State's played 3 games, West Virginia's played 4, and one of those games for each of them is Kansas, and one of them for West Virginia is Eastern Kentucky.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the other one is each other. Yeah. Oh, no, they haven't played each other.
Yeah, no, they did.
Yeah, right. Sorry. Yeah. I was confused.
When you look at this quarterback situation that's unfolding, so I guess Gundy said both quarterbacks will likely play, Illingworth and Sanders. Are any of you guys worried that we were projecting a massive jump in Spencer Sanders from last year to this year? I think I was. You know, but he wasn't great last year, struggled somewhat, did not put up typical Mike Gundy quarterback type of numbers. So maybe there is more to this story than, hey, you just plug him right back in. Maybe you do see both quarterbacks, as Shane Ellingworth coming off a game where he had 3 touchdowns and 0 interceptions against guess who? Kansas. But I do wonder how this will unfold if there is more of a competition. My hunch tells me it's probably a coach do the things the coach does. Hey, be ready for both, and then you'll go with one. But I don't think it's like Spencer Sanders. It's not like you're getting a grad transfer, somebody who's had a lot of playing experience and played great. He still needs to take that next jump to make this offense as good as they want it to be.
I agree with that 100%. And that's definitely part of the calculation that has me bullish on Oklahoma State. The only thing is, like, to this point, there is no reason to think he hasn't taken that jump. Like, we've seen one drive out of him, and they scored on that drive. I'm not doubting it yet, but absolutely, that's got to be part of the deal, is Spencer Sanders being really good.
My question, though, because, like, let's say it is Gundy doing like the mind games that coaches will do. Like, is there enough of a difference between Sanders and Ellingworth to even really try that? Because it's not like one of them's the running QB and one of them's the pocket guy. They're both pretty much, you know, guys that are doing all their damage from the pocket with their arms. So I don't know. Maybe
I don't know.
Maybe Ben Kercheval's been in Gundy's ear, man. Maybe he's been telling him, listen, you got the guy already.
I think Spencer Sanders is significantly more athletic than Shane Ellingworth. Like, I think he provides a significantly more dynamic threat. So I think they would be very different game plans in terms of the way you would attack them defensively.
Coming up on the other side, some significant personnel information coming from one of the Big Ten teams that are going to be kicking off their 2020 season this weekend. And as promised, we'll have our Noles to go next.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Confidence is so important. When you're making your picks, when you're choosing winners, when you want to look good, confidence is it's essential. You know, it's how you're able to go about your day and accomplish all the goals that you need. And I know that, you know, feeling really confident is easier when you've got some good clothes, like the new look that you've got from Express. And I think the big thing that comes here is that you've got all day comfort. It might feel like your favorite sweats with the extra stretch, but it's a flattering fit. You don't look like a slob out there. You know, it just makes your life easier to have one outfit or a few different pieces that can work from, you know, the most casual setting or, you know, the most fancy work event. And so that is why we want you to be able to share in this kind of comfort, share in this kind of versatility with Express. And the way that you can get $25 off your $50 purchase is to text COVER to 397-737. Once again, that's text COVER, COVER, to 397-737 to receive $25 off your $50 purchase. purchase. We're talking wrinkle-resistant fabric. It's great for traveling. And of course, as we mentioned, all-day comfort. Make sure that you can go about your day with confidence, with versatility, in the most comfortable way possible. Do it with Express and get $25 off your $50 purchase by texting COVER to 397-737. So one of the interesting details about the way that things unfolded in the Big Ten was the opportunity for some of these players that declared for the NFL draft, and even some of them that signed with agents, they were allowed to come back. You know, the NCAA was going to allow them to be eligible. The schools worked with the clearinghouse. You know, as long as it's insignificant impermissible benefits. You can say that. Insignificant impermissible benefits. Like if you could prove that, like, yeah, here's what we got, paid back, blah, 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 you're good to go. This is very significantly a Rashad Bateman, you know, declared for the NFL draft, but was able to get cleared, able to return. He joins a Minnesota offense and a Minnesota team that we're all very excited about. That Minnesota team will be hosting Michigan on Saturday night in Minneapolis. And Jim Harbaugh confirmed on Monday that Nico Collins would not be with the team. He's not on the roster. And it kind of shuts the door on the idea that he might be back in the fold with the Wolverines after being one of those players that initially declared for the NFL draft. Quote, Nico is not participating in football right now. I don't have a crystal ball as to if his mind would change. I know he is not currently on the team. He's been a very, very talented player within that Michigan passing attack, not individually prolific. He had 729 receiving yards and 7 touchdowns, but again, decided to opt out before the Big Ten announced its return. So you're also losing from this Michigan team Shea Patterson, 4 starting offensive linemen, and wide receiver Donovan Peoples-Jones. Michigan starts as a top 25 team in the polls after re-entering sort of where they were around the preseason. I mean, Tom, what's realistic? What's the loss here for Collins? Who do you think steps up? Like, and you know, where are we at? Now we are going to have full Big Ten win totals coming this week. We teased it on Twitter over the weekend, and it's going to be coming up. But you know, maybe without tipping your hand, we're not breaking down schedules or anything like this. But man, like this feels like a reality check for me that just putting Michigan number 3 in the division and walking away feeling like my job is done this year might not be the year for it.
Yeah, it's in one way it's big. Like, I don't want to ignore it, but at the same time, like you mentioned, they've already lost so much. Like, if we go back to the preseason and we look at Bill Connelly's returning production, you know, rankings, mm-hmm. Michigan was already at the bottom of that list anyway, because they had a ton to replace. So I feel like at this point, maybe losing Nico Collins isn't as badly felt just because you already had a ton to replace. But like, it is significant in that his overall numbers weren't amazing last year. He had the 37 catches, 729 yards. But he did have 7 touchdowns, and he was the big play threat in that offense. This was an offense last year that really didn't have a whole lot of explosiveness to it. And Collins was kind of like that release valve. He was the one guy that they could go to. Shea Patterson felt comfortable going deep. And if you look at the receiving core from last year, Ronnie Bell, the team's leading receiver, is back, but he's more of a possession receiver type guy who has questionable hands sometimes. Nico was second. Donovan Peoples-Jones, he's gone. After that, Tariq Black, he's at Texas, he's gone. You had your tight ends, Nick Eubanks and Sean McKeon, they're both gone. There aren't really any proven entities besides Ronnie Bell in that receiver core right now. And if this is a team that, you know, is going to make any noise in the Big Ten this year, it's going to have to answer a lot of questions. And it's starting the season with Minnesota at Minnesota. So it's not like there's a soft landing for them to try to figure these things out. They've got a really tough game right off the bat.
Yeah. I mean, this is Josh Gattis's year 2. This is year 1 of Joe Milton. This is Harbaugh getting backed in the corner a little bit. What is he like, only 2 years left on his contract or something this year and one more?
Yes. The I think he's got 14 months left on his contract. There was like this, the window to extend him. Speaking of like contract extensions, the window to extend him kind of came and went during this offseason. And
isn't Harbaugh his own agent?
There was some indication
that would be so Harbaugh.
That, remember, like, that Jim Harbaugh's aggressive stance towards continuing to practice and the fact that they should be playing, I think, was going against some of the general positions of Michigan's university leadership. And there is, and I think the way that the story is being painted is that maybe if that relationship was a little bit cozier during this offseason, maybe a deal would have gotten done. But as it stands, I think he's got 14 months left on his contract, and we'll see what happens based on how things go this year.
I also think that part of it is that they weren't really interested in announcing a contract extension during a pandemic when everything had been shut down.
True. It's, and those things do, like, the deal gets done and then the deal doesn't get announced until, you know, way later and after the fact. So that's definitely a part of this. But this is Pete Thamel. Why does he only have 14 months left on his deal? Do Harbaugh's Hyatt results match Michigan's Ritz-Carlton ambitions? That's a sports writer line if I've ever heard one.
That is a great line. It's but with Nico Collins being out, I think we've seen on full display a couple teams. Now, I don't think – I mean, I have another question for you guys too. My ADD has got a little best of me. What do you guys think the line – have you guys checked the line on the Minnesota game?
I could check it really
quickly. Because when you guys were talking about it, I was like, I wonder if Michigan is a favorite. They are a favorite. They're a three-point favorite. I'm looking at it like, why? It's in Minnesota. They've got a lot of returning players, Minnesota does. But this game this year is huge. But as I was getting back to Nico Collins, like, game-changing receivers. I know Nico Collins wasn't as good as some players that are flourishing this year, but he was going to be the big play guy for Michigan. Look at what was on display at Georgia versus Bama this Saturday night. Like, you saw one team had multiple guys, playmakers. You saw one where they're really trying to make George Pickens into one, and he kind of is struggling a little bit to break out in that role. Look at Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a team that's ranked fourth, but they're being held back because they don't have a playmaker at receiver. Like, these guys aren't walking around the street like, just, hey, we'll go grab another one or get another one off the bench or off. It just – so I think it could be a significant impact on Joe Milton's development and how far this offense wants to go, barring somebody else younger that steps up and all of a sudden just takes over that alpha wide receiver, you know, big play type of guy. But without seeing that yet, it's kind of like, man, this could be a rough year for Michigan.
Yeah, no, spoiler alert, if like Bateman's playing, Ottman's Bell's playing, and Tanner Morgan are all playing on Saturday and Minnesota's still an underdog, I'll be all over Minnesota.
3.5 right now. If we're giving out early winners.
But see, that's the thing. I it's too early. You never know these days. You're going to find out half this offensive line has got COVID and hasn't practiced in 3 weeks.
Would we just find that out? Are they keeping all that tight? Because I know we've got daily testing.
Like an hour before a kick. Like, oh, none of these guys are dressed and on the field.
But in the Big Ten, it can't be too many, right? Because if it's too many, then they're shut down. So at least we'll know, like, we have some comfort. It's not going to be the whole team.
So on that note, how do you guys feel about this Baylor line? Like, Baylor, I can't remember. I don't even know what the line is. But Baylor is, like, now, like, it's newsworthy. Baylor is working out. Is
Baylor against Texas?
Do you just have to fade Baylor here? Or do you just have to stay away? Or do we think that Baylor could have maintained sort of operational capacity over the last, whatever it's been, 3 weeks.
I'm scared of any COVID-related shutdown. Where are they after what happened in the NFL in your backyard there, Barton, when the Titans smoked the Bills? And I was one of those people who were like, hey, they can't be game ready. I mean, they blew them out and they had like two practices. So, and I know it's NFL, it's different, but man, I just think I don't love trying to read in too much into the what's going on behind the scenes without knowing, you know.
But that's what
I like the way you're thinking.
Well, like, yeah, like, are we getting some free value on Baylor because of the COVID stuff? And in fact, Baylor, maybe they're fresh. They're chopping at the bit.
My strong initial inclination there is that you've got a potential, you've got a dead man walking in Tom Herman, a potential fracturing in the locker room over who will and won't stand for the eyes of Texas after the game. And a little bit of just all that and more than a touchdown. If you just want to jump on the other side and be like, yeah, Texas might win, but they don't deserve to be more than a touchdown favorite against anybody.
Yeah, it's 9.5 right now.
It's gone down. It was north of 10.
Yeah, it was like 11, 10.5 when it first opened.
See, that's that would be somebody that's already jumping on that side right there, right? Somebody that's already gonna be like, I don't think Baylor should be downgraded that much in that kind of scenario. Is that the play?
Yeah, I mean, like Danny was saying, it's hard to know. I mean, I feel like some teams will probably react better to it than others. And like, you know, Tennessee, maybe they had a lot more than two practices. We should go to Barton's High School to find out how many they were there for. But it's like, don't know what Baylor's been doing.
You know what it's like to me? It's like bowl season when you're trying to figure out who's motivated and who's not.
Yeah.
And you always go to the like affirmation after. You're like, oh yeah, they didn't want to be there, you knew it. But then there's always a surprise team that was, you know, picked to be a playoff team, and they finished the season, you know, 7-5, or you know, they finished the regular season 6-5, and then they go blow out their opponent because for whatever reason they just flipped the switch and they turned it on. Like, it's such an inexact science. I don't know.
Well, Virginia Tech's taking us on this roller coaster, like COVID related, like in one team. They were sandbagging, though.
That was easy. Fuente sandbagging, be like, I don't have anybody today. Like, just setting it up. Cause then if you lose, you got an excuse. And if you win, you're the greatest coach ever.
Yeah. But then they had the blowout when we thought they had nobody because of COVID. And then they got like their tail whipped because they didn't have anybody. And then they still didn't have anybody. And then they beat somebody else. Like, it's been,
I'm starting to think Justin Fuente is making up players that aren't even on the team, and he's just listing them as out. Oh yeah, we're missing these 23 guys. There's Joe Smith the third, John Smith,
Stetson Bennett the fifth, sixth, and seventh out there. There's another interesting I guess you could say COVID adjacent or COVID related betting line out there, where Cincinnati, which had positive tests that led to that Tulsa game getting postponed, is going to be going on the road to play SMU, who just survived in overtime at Tulane. Again, first game without Reggie Roberson, first game without TJ McNeil, but you know, the offense still cooked. Shane Buechele had 380 some odd passing yards. But SMU is a favorite against Cincinnati in that game. Is that Cincinnati getting docked, or do you think that SMU is a deserving favorite?
I think they're deserving, honestly.
SMU's pretty good. SMU's a pretty good football team.
Yeah, I'm sure the COVID stuff is certainly playing a role there, because yeah, Cincinnati opened as a 1.5-point favorite in that game, and it has moved to the SMU side. So clearly, I think Cincinnati's a good team. I don't know if I consider them good enough to be favored on the road against SMU, though, especially with the layoff. But again, we have no idea how any of these teams are going to react to any of this stuff.
I saw Bill Conley's latest from ESPN. He listed the top five offenses and top five defenses in S&P Plus. If you don't factor in any preseason expectations, because he has all these like, you know, preseason models built in, if it's just purely the results. And I think Cincinnati was like number one or something, just based on the season alone.
In defense?
On defense. Sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because of that Austin Peay, Army, and South Florida.
South Florida.
South Florida's doing the Kansas on a lot of folks right now.
Man. I think the reason, I mean, Desmond Ridder is a little inconsistent, right? I mean, that's the issue. If he ironed things out and was just a little bit more careful with the football, this team would be so dangerous. But I think that's a specific reason. In a high possession game where SMU is going to put up some points, like, you're going to trust Desmond Ridder? It's hard to, based on what we've seen so far this year.
It's kind of a tangent here because we're talking about Cincinnati, but I wrote about this in the Monday After this morning. Why the hell is Cincinnati ranked ahead of BYU in the AP poll and coaches poll?
Because like, they started higher.
You want to get in the AP poll though?
That's like, what I'm saying. It's like, It's like the perfect example of just poll mentality of, well, they were already there and they won, so just keep pushing them up a spot or two. It's like, what have you seen from watching Cincinnati this year compared to what you've seen from watching BYU that makes you think, oh yeah, Cincinnati's four spots better than BYU?
I'm disappointed in you, in particular, Frenelli, okay? We have our CBS. It's been the CBS 76 for the first 6 weeks of the year. This weekend, we were given the full 127 teams that are playing this year ballot. And I, being a man of principle, turned my ballot in top 50 teams only with the teams that have played. I get an incredulous email from our editor, Adam Silverstein, saying, hey, the instructions were to include all the teams that, in the ballot this week. I said, well, I included all the teams that I want on there because they're the only ones that have played. And he said, oh, okay, well, if that's the way you want to do it, that's fine. You're just the only person that chose to vote that way. So thanks for leaving me out on the island as the only person in the CBS Sports College Football family that has any sort of moral compass amongst us.
Listen, I probably shouldn't talk about this on the show. Maybe we could talk about it after the show. I have turned it because I have always ranked every single team when we do these rankings every single week based off the rankings in my formula. Well, this year, my formula is blown to hell because it really doesn't understand how it can rank teams that have played one game versus teams that have played five games. So the first week of the year, we get our ballots. Adam has us turn them in. And I turn mine in, and I get an email from Adam that's like, no. I was like, what do you mean, no? And he says, no, this isn't a believable ballot. I'm like, well, what's not believable about it? And he's like, that's what my rankings say. And he's like, no, this is going to completely screw up our rankings. So I've had to turn in. He's had me turn in my own rankings, just opinion based. Yeah, I'm being censored. I am being censored. I cannot turn in my ballot the way I want to. Trust me. It's probably for the best because right now in my rankings, since they've only played one game and they beat the crap out of Navy doing it, Air Force is the number one team in the country. But yeah, so I was told to bring it in teams, and he told me to add, you know, the Big Ten and the Pac-12. So I said, okay, because honestly, we talked about this a little bit on Saturday too. I sure as hell wasn't going to put Notre Dame at number three. So Ohio State threw me a life vest. I was able to put Ohio State at number three this week.
But why can't you just put Georgia at three?
Oh, don't do that. Don't do that, Barton. Don't get started. This is a Georgia pod, though.
I put them at four. I mean, they're still ahead of Notre Dame in my poll.
Yeah.
Danny, I do not have your back on the whole, like, if you lose, you drop no matter what.
Well, they have to drop somewhere.
If you lose to a team that's ranked higher than you, the team that ranks higher than you is supposed to beat you.
What about the score? Does that matter? Like, it's not like they lost by a field goal. They got run in the second half. And it's the same exact thing we've seen every single meeting that we've seen Georgia versus Bama. Every single time.
Who is better than Georgia right now? Who did
I
you
still
rank
think
above
Florida
Georgia?
Is. I did not put them. But what do we know based on Georgia? It goes back to the Tennessee win does not look as good. The Auburn win does not look as good. The Arkansas win, ironically, is the best one, and that was the sloppiest, ugliest one they had at the time. Okay, so like, it goes back to how are we judging this team against who?
You think Florida is better than Georgia? Like, so first of all,
feel really good about my Florida pick
against
Georgia.
You released like a top eight, right? Like you on the Twitter, you released like a top eight or something?
I did, yeah. Yes. So
who do you have ahead of Georgia in that ranking?
I got several teams ahead of Georgia. Teams that actually won games this week is who I got. Notre Dame. Well, so I have Ohio State. So I included the Big Ten. So I had Ohio State and Penn State. I had Oklahoma State in there and BYU. Like, you want some BYU love? Give me some BYU love
I'm
over
okay
Georgia.
With BYU, actually. All right. So do you also have Florida ahead of them?
I do. And Florida's the team that I'm really in a tough spot with because I don't have A&M ahead of them, even though they won. And I hate everything about the principal. Like, I'm a hypocrite because I criticize the AP for doing the same thing. But the way I do it is the same way the committee goes, hey, if they were neutral field, who do you think would win again? Like, I think Florida would win in 10 games on a neutral field. I think Florida would win 6 to 7 times.
Against Georgia?
They beat them.
Okay. No,
against Texas A&M. Oh, okay. Against Texas A&M.
I agree.
So that's how I kind of talk my way out of that one, even though I hate it.
So you do actually believe that Florida is better than Georgia?
I do. I think they have defensive problems, but I think Florida is going to score points against Georgia. I think their defense is good, but I think Florida's offense will be able to put up points, and it goes back to the same thing. Against Florida's defense, yes, maybe they can get a shootout, but do you trust Stetson Bennett to have to get in a high-scoring game similar to what we saw against Alabama? I don't.
All right, so they play on a neutral site, obviously. Yeah. They're like right now, if the game was this weekend, you would pick Florida to win.
I absolutely would. And I wouldn't even think twice about it.
Okay, dude, like, let's cut out the juice. Like, you and me, you want to make a bet?
Hey, wait.
Absolutely.
You go Florida. Is the game between COVID Gators or healthy Gators? Because the Gators are dealing with some stuff right now.
We got, what, 3 weeks till that game?
Yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying. No, because you have – no. Because you would then have 3 weeks to like, create some sort of, like, you know, reason for the –
I am stubborn to a fault. I will not change my mind. They could lose 3 games, and I'll still go down with Kyle Trask and company, the Super Swamp Brothers.
So you wouldn't be – you're not necessarily ready to make that pick right now. You want to make that pick week of.
We can make it now if you want. They'll be fine. I feel confident.
I feel confident.
I'd worry about who's playing quarterback for you at Georgia.
I mean, I'd worry about who's coaching for you guys.
It'll be you guys. Now all of a sudden I'm Gator Danny.
Yeah.
I like how that worked out.
Gator Dan has entered the group chat.
3 weeks from now, I wanted to go to Florida, not Florida State. There just wasn't an offer for me.
Were you recruited by Florida?
I was, yeah. Me and Danny Werfel both, we chatted. We talked all the time during the recruiting process.
He was your class?
We decided together that we weren't going to go to the same school because he wanted to go to Florida State too. Like, I was looking at Florida. We were both looking at him. And I did jump the gun. I went first to Florida State. The next day, he went to Florida. So I took the first choice, and I got it.
Get it if you want it. Jump in. Don't wait.
You ever think of what might have been?
I do all the time.
Playing for Spurrier, putting up all the charts.
Absolutely. I loved my time at Florida State, but there's all the time. Like, I'll be like, man, I wonder what would have happened if I would have went to Florida. And it's okay. Like, because Werfel had an outstanding career. Dude, that's a Heisman. Like, what could have been?
We'd be looking at that turtleneck on stage at Radio City Music Hall or whatever place.
Exactly. But Werfel was more coachable than me. Like, I don't know if I would have survived the getting pulled every other series with Terry Dean or whatever it was that freshman year when he was going in and out with that. I don't know if I would have handled that as well as Werfel did. So everything worked out perfect for a reason.
All right, Danny. We'll announce tomorrow, okay? We'll both announce tomorrow, I promise. Click. It's like, yo, I'm going to Florida State.
Hey, Coach Bowden, I'm in.
Yeah, I'm in. All right.
Order for Danny. Order for Danny.
It's time for our Noles to go. The Florida State Seminoles, 31-7 at halftime. Hold on. Even fourth quarter Sam Howell, everything that he did to try to mount a comeback in that second half, the explosive plays were numerous in the first half, including some big pass plays by Jordan Travis, JT, as Danny's best friend Charlie Ward likes to say. Danny, coming off the victory against the top five Tar Heels, has your opinion of the team, where they're at, changed at all, and what were the big takeaways?
No, I don't think it's changed at all. Like, I don't think they're going to win the ACC all of a sudden, and I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the ACC either. We all talked about this last week. Like, there were some positive signs that you've seen since they made the change at quarterback, yes, but just there's been an influx of positive energy. There's been a breath of fresh air. And I hate doing it to James Blackman because I love the guy. He's such a good leader, such an emotional guy for that team. But he was struggling. I mean, that's the only way to put it. He was struggling. They made the switch. All of a sudden, you saw a little bit of life in the offense. And they go to Notre Dame. Even Notre Dame, in the fourth quarter, Notre Dame was trying to score. Defense gets a stop, right? In the fourth quarter, nothing on the line except the spread, which some people might have been really watching that one closely. They got a stop to kind of just – and they didn't quit. Then against North Carolina, I thought for the first time you saw the impact that coaching can make, which was very refreshing to see because I don't think we saw that in the last couple of years. I think it was holding them back sometimes, especially clock management things. But in this game specifically, I thought you saw plays designed that played to Jordan Travis's strengths. Like, he is a running quarterback, right? And he has limitations right now as a passer. But all of a sudden, they dialed up a couple different play-action passes built off the run game that they've been implementing on Jordan Travis. And what they do? They pop for really pretty – like, he made some great throws, but a lot of them are wide open. Those are scheme plays that they designed for him. So I thought the offensive game plan was phenomenal. And then on the defensive side of the ball, like, when I see Josh Kando get a pick six because he recognizes there's a flare route coming, steps in front of it, and goes the other way, I'm like, oh – he's seen this play before in practice. Like, he's recognizing what he's been coached to do. So I thought it was a massive win from the perspective of, okay, we can see some improvement happening, which is huge. We haven't seen that. It's been so negative. And now it's easy to say this, but during the second half, all I kept thinking was, oh my gosh, they're going to blow another lead, aren't they? Like, this team, like, they're mentally frayed, and you could tell they were hanging on for dear life. North Carolina, a couple drop balls later, else it would have been another disaster for Florida State. But just the fact that they could get that win, I think I think it makes for a much better first year, Mike Norvell. Like, there wasn't much, you know, bright, shiny things to look at and say, this is great. You didn't really see much. Now it's something tangible. Like, you saw results. You know, I think this team can turn it around a little bit and, you know, be a tougher out than a walkover opponent for the rest of the schedule.
And I mean, the next 3 weeks, or next three games at least, all suddenly look a lot more winnable. Louisville on the road looks winnable. Pitt, I think, is winnable. And then you get NC State now without Devin Leary. It's, you know, things might be a lot better for the Noles in 3 weeks.
They might, but they might not.
True.
Hate to bring.
No, you're fine. I'm with you. I'm with you.
I mean, think about because they had to have a block punt touchdown, a pick six. They didn't score in the second half, and North Carolina had to drop a few passes late in that fourth quarter drive to get out of there with the win. And a win's a win, and North Carolina's a good team. And so, you know, I'm not going to make excuses for anybody, but I still think, like, there's kind of a recipe for beating Florida State. And we know what Jordan Travis is.
Right.
That's going to be, I don't know, there's going to be some challenges ahead of them. They still got to continue to, like, figure more stuff out and continue to evolve.
To your point, Barton, it was like when they went to those plays, it was like, okay, we've used them now. Right. Like, what's now in the second half?
Yeah.
And now the teams, now that'll be part of the development of Jordan Travis. Can they continue this improvement? Totally agree.
They not blowing the fourth quarter lead was a huge step. Mentally, because you mentioned the drop balls by North Carolina's wide receivers. There were also a lot of penalties, and like the kind of penalties that were starting to rack up and extend drives for North Carolina, you know, like a roughing the passer, you know, just a bunch of things along the way. You could see frustration was starting to build, and the, oh no, here it goes again, was able to, you know, you're able to keep that at bay. It's a big win.
Huge.
Big win. Win's a win. Make sure that you're subscribed to the Cover 3 podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, all of that. Make sure that you're subscribed to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/cover3, for that multi-platform excellence, because the Big Ten win totals are coming. We're going to hit you with Tuesday, Wednesday, Big Ten win totals. Then we're getting into our Week 8 locks on Thursday. Nothing but picks, nothing but winners the rest of the week. You subscribe, you get your notepad out, you take notes. What is it? Shout out Hakeem Dernemish. Knowledge in your mind, money in your pocket. That's the way it goes out there. You can follow him on Twitter at Danny Cannell. You can follow him at Tom Fennell. You can follow him at Barton Sims. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.